This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo. Today we are going from softball to baseball to see how we can learn from each other. And what a better way to do that with the coach that has coached at every level. I think he's the only coach that's coached at every level, all the way to professional baseball and in both sports. This is going to be a great show. But before we start, don't forget, check us out, Baseball Outside the Box. Welcome all our listeners to Facebook Live. If you have any questions for Matt, I'll introduce Matt in a second. Please type it down at the bottom in the comments, and we will get those questions in. We've got a lot of great things for the show today. And Matt, let me tell you, he is the internet man. 700,000 followers, the most followed coach on the internet, baseball and softball. But he's got a tremendous amount of background when it comes to coaching. Currently the assistant softball coach at Fresno State University. Let me just jump in, and then later on we'll get into it. But, oh, wait. How could Coach Caliendo forget this one? You go back to June 7th, 2018 on the podcast. I just interviewed Jim Rushford, a major league player, great perseverance story that made it to the big leagues. The odds were definitely against him. But let me tell you, I got another TV movie right here from a guy that went on 2010, living in his car all the way to being with the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball along the way, college baseball, high school baseball. I really believe here we go again, making a movie. We got to do it one day. So let's welcome Matt Lyle. What's up, buddy? The movie star. I think one day.
Hey, Peter. Good to see you. Thanks for having me on, man.
No, are you kidding? You're doing me the favor. You've really, you know, in a short period, because I think it's been 14, 15 years, maybe it's 18 years that you've been in the game. But, you know, if, to me, that's still a short period. And, man, you've come a long ways. I got to ask you this, might as well. And we got guys joining us already. Matter of fact, Anthony Iaposi, Cubs major league hitting coach. Had him on last show. He's waving, says hi. You know, I know we're not going to get into your story because they can go into the podcast from before. But, you know, all these years, if you had to give advice to hang in there, stay with it, what would that advice be for somebody that's in the game? Because, you know, people are going to struggle. You know, it's not going to be all fun and games along the way. What's your advice to some of those coaches out there?
For me, it's really just about, you know, how bad do you want it? You know, I think that everybody I talk to says, you know, how do I get into college coaching? How do I get into pros? And when I tell them, hey, you know what? You've got to work a full-time job, maybe work a graveyard shift, 40, 50 hours a week, plus be a dad, plus, you know, all these other things. And on top of that, you got to find time to coach and build your thing. So I think that the actual sacrifice that it takes, most people, you know, get eliminated right from there. So, you know, for me, as a kid growing up, you know, my dream was to be a Major League Baseball player. That didn't happen. I've loved this game so much. And for me, it was really about just the coaches and men and people who poured into my life and spoke into my life that I wanted to be like those guys. And so for me, I just knew it was a calling. Like, there was no other thing for me to do. I didn't want to do anything else. I want to coach. I want to make impact. I want to make significance in people's lives. So for me, even those days, like I said, I was homeless in my car eating tuna fish from Safeway. To me, I knew that's what I was called to do. And for me, I was going to do everything possible to do that. So I think it just has to be something that you are, you know, convicted to the point that there's no other answer other than, you know, surviving it.
And folks, go back to baseballoutsidethebox.com. Check it out. June 7th, 2018 episode. You got to hear the whole story. Incredible. All right. Before we start, we're going to get into softball and then mix it in with baseball and try to learn from each other here. I say each other, from baseball to softball, softball to baseball. But I got to ask you, okay? Now, guys, Matt is a speaker. He owns the Hitting Vault, one of the most successful websites when it comes to, you know, all kinds of information, videos and all that. And we can talk about that. You know, you're an author, but I got to ask you, you're also a businessman and you're pretty smart. Domingo Ayala. Okay, now, he's got a ton of followers. Obviously, I saw your series on Domingo Ayala, and I got to tell you, it was really good. Tell me about it.
Well, it was really fun. Back then, a couple years ago, I was working with Jock Peterson. I had worked with him off and on for a couple years and was buddies with him. And so we just came up with this idea, and I presented it to Jock and Domingo. I said, hey, let's do this funny video where I'm working with Jock, and, you know, you come in and we can't figure out this problem. We need Domingo to help us. And so, you know, they kind of played off each other. It was all those guys doing it, and you can see how acting is definitely not my gift, if you watch that video at all. But it was fun to do it and make it, and just, you know, for me, you know, the one thing, my grandfather coached for 38 years in college, and the thing that I always took from him was that coaching should be about fun. And so for me, you know, anytime I can get a project that's related to coaching baseball, it's fun. You know, I'm always trying to make, you know, fun things to do with it. So that was just a fun thing that we got to do. And I'm glad we got to do that.
Absolutely. Did you pick up the baseballs and did you pay that invoice? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that was all ad-libbed. That wasn't scripted at all. So it definitely, like, we were like genuinely laughing. I got to find some outtakes from that videos because Domingo literally like ad-libbed that whole thing. So we were just kind of trying to play off of him a little bit, and it definitely was cracking me up.
Well, you got to have fun in this game because sometimes we get a little too serious and talk about ad-lib. That's what we're going to be doing here. We ad-lib. We have some idea where we want to go, but we're going to play up the questions. And here's where we really want to start. Matt Lyle, the routine that you have, you know, especially nowadays being indoors, and even though you can get outside because you're in warm weather, what kind of routine do you have to make yourself better, to stay consistent, stay mentally focused in what you're trying to do all the time?
Well, you know, for me, I realized, you know, I've had some years being an entrepreneur, some years being a coach, that if I don't have a routine, I'm a mess. Like, I don't do well with just, you know, open canvas of the day. And so I've got to have this regimented routine of getting up at this certain hour. So, you know, I've made a deal with my wife a couple years ago that's scored me a ton of points. So if anybody's want to score some points at home, I made a deal that I get up really early, like 5:15, 5:30.
Wow.
And I get up and I try to get some reading done or some emails and kind of get my day started. And I get up with our three youngest kids. I feed them, get them dressed so that my wife can have a little bit of sleep time. And so that's kind of my routine. Get the kids ready for school, help them out in the mornings. And then, you know, I always try to work out in the morning for a while. And so, and then I get through my day, whether there's practice and meetings and the different things that I have. But, you know, I try to go to bed at the same time. I try to wake up at the same time. You know, when I coached at Mizzou with Coach Beezer, incredible routine guy. He was in the office every morning at 7:30 doing his reading. I mean, such a regimented guy that when I felt like I was kind of getting off my routine, you know, I would kind of follow him and be like, man, this guy does not get off his routine. He is to a T every day. And it shows why he's had a lot of success in his career. So for me, I just know that if I map out my days and my routine really well of like, hey, I want to get this accomplished. I'm going to get my emails done. I want to do some learning. And I always try to find some time, whether it's a half hour, an hour a day, to read. The game changer for me was Audible, listening to audiobooks in the car. So if I spend time in the car, I've cranked out a ton of books in the last couple of years because instead of listening to music, which I enjoy doing, I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks. So for me, I'm always trying to just learn a little bit more, spend some time learning.
Well, everybody, if you want to learn, you got to go to Matt Lyle. Go on Twitter at Coach Lyle. Unbelievable, but he's all over social media, so you can check him out. Also, his website, MattLyle.com. Check all that out, and we'll have it all in the show notes. Hey, listen, during these times, we've been in the house. You know, some people have a backyard, been able to go in the backyard. You've got large following. I'm sure you got a lot of people asking you, you know, what's my son and daughter? What can they do at home, in the backyard? You know, how do they stay sharp? How do they stay mentally prepared? Because the season could open up on any level. We're going to get into the college softball, but it can open up on any level. Some advice out there for, you know, the parents and the coaches and players, you know, what to do during these times.
Yeah. So I always think about it from the perspective of my kids. So if my kids, you know, they're a teenager and, you know, they're saying, I get a lot of teenagers say, I want to play in college. I want to play in the pros. They say these things, but then you got to yell at them to get off the iPad or yell at them to stop playing the PlayStation or Fortnite. So to me, I always ask the kids, you know, you say you want to play college, but, you know, your parents got to yell at you to get off the screen. So, you know, for me, I kind of challenge those kids. Hey, this is the only time, and hopefully in our lifetime, that we have to deal with something like this, where you're going to be home this often and you have the ability to really hone down on some skills and work on your game. And you know, in my house with my 8-year-old son, he's addicted to the to YouTube and Nintendo Switch. And so, you know, he earns screen time based on chores and schoolwork and activities. So I'm like, hey, if you want a half hour on that Nintendo Switch, you got to go do a half hour of playing catch with dad or hitting off the tee. And you know, I definitely wish that he would be self-motivated in some of that. But like you said, you know, for a lot of young kids, Nintendo Switch and YouTube is going to take precedence over some of that stuff. So you got to get creative with getting them out there. But for me, you know, I would just encourage kids, teenagers, and parents that, you know, this is a great time to take a break from the hustle and bustle of playing 150 travel ball games or high school games and this crazy schedule. And I think a lot of players, they want to work on something, whether it's pitch development, their swing. And they always say, like, oh, I'm going to do it in the offseason. And then they put it off. This is the time. Like, if you're going to have any time to really focus on something new, swing development-wise, pitch development-wise, this is a great opportunity that you have. And so, you know, I use the word challenge. I would challenge my student-athletes to say, hey, when you look at your day, you know, how many hours a day are you on Netflix and YouTube versus how many days you're in the backyard or the garage hitting? And I think when players actually look at what they're doing, it's different. Whereas you and I and, you know, a lot of our generation, I spent days throwing the tennis ball on a little line against a garage door or the front door and play wiffle ball in the backyard until my mom had to force me to come inside. You know, that's what we did all day long. You know, I'm the oldest of seven kids. And so me and my brothers would play wiffle ball in the front yard, backyard, you know, two-hand football every day. And it's a different America right now. And so I just think that if we can find some fun ways, wiffle ball games with dad in the backyard, with mom in the backyard, to me, that'd be the best way to get them out there and working on it.
Matt, I know you're just, you know, one of your specialties, obviously, is being a hitting coach, but you're an all-over coach. You could coach at any level, anywhere, anytime. Your players now at Fresno State University, what's the communication like between your players and yourself? Is it on internet? And what are you discussing with them to get them also prepared? Is it very similar to what you just said, or is it?
Yeah, it's you know, we do a weekly Zoom call with our players every week, and we check in, and then I probably FaceTime with almost half the team every day, and using my, you know, FaceTime, and we do group chats. I'll chat with the seniors one day. I'll chat with different groups that we have. We make small groups, and I do a lot of individual stuff too. You know, I think for college athletes right now, you know, you've got to really be careful because, you know, they worked all year long. They worked all fall, all spring to play these 55 games, and they got ripped away from them halfway through. And it's hard to be the coach to say, hey, you know, you got all this ripped away from you. Now go in the backyard and work on your swing. You know, and so, you know, I'm trying to have a little bit of grace. And during this time for me as a coach, I'm spending most of my time talking to them, just building a relationship because, you know, as a coach in the regular season, in the fall, you know, we're with these players all day long and we get to know them the best we can, but we don't get a lot of opportunities like this where the world stops and we can spend. So, you know, we've been talking about, you know, the different shows, The Tiger King and all the different shows that are watching and getting to know them more about their families and stuff like that. So for me, it's probably been more about relationship building with the student athletes than it is about hitting. But I think at the end of the day, you know, as a coach knows, the team culture and the type of relationship and trust you build with your athletes goes just as far as, you know, taking 100 swings off the tee. So, you know, I think that's for most coaches, if you can invest in building some relationship with your athletes, I think it's going to go a long way when things go back to normal.
Are there some players of yours that, you know, that have the ability that, you know, they're hitting a little bit, whether it be in a cage or down, you know, in the basement, and do they use any technology so you could take a look at it? Is there anything of that going on right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, all of our players have blast motion sensors, so they can always, you know, text me, hey, is these numbers good? Or can you watch this swing video? Absolutely. You know, I still have some of my MLB guys that still send me videos. They're working in the, you know, backyard, or they're trying to kind of get ready for this possible season. And so, you know, technology is an incredible use of time where you can, like, again, like you and I are chit-chatting here face-to-face with video, and players can set up the iPhone and the FaceTime and say, hey, coach, I'm going to take some swings off the tee. What do you see? I mean, we have the ability to have these live connections where we can talk through things, and it's incredible that, you know, one of the advantages of 2020 is to be able to do that, and it's pretty cool.
Absolutely. I agree with you, man. The technology is awesome. And, you know, I saw just the other day on another subject, they're actually cutting hair. So what they're doing is the person has, you know, Skype or whatever, and the instructor teaches them how to cut the hair. I mean, you got to be innovative during these times.
Yeah, I need to watch that. Send me the link of the video, because every week I'm like, oh, man, I'm just going to shave my head. All right. I'm scared to tell my wife to YouTube how to give a haircut, because I don't really trust her to do it. So that's one of the topics that I've been interested in, is how do I cut my hair during this time?
That's going to be valuable, no doubt about it. Went from toilet paper to cutting hair.
Yep.
Listen, my experience in softball, I'm going to give it to you real fast. It takes 2 seconds. I was in Belgium as a baseball coach, a national team. I started playing some softball, and they put me on a team, and all of a sudden I'm playing the Dutch. The Dutch are like 6-something. I'm trying to hit off of these guys. You know, balls coming 100 miles an hour. That's one experience. Two, with women in baseball, I did a tryout with USA Baseball, and then after that, some lessons in the old days that we used to give to softball players once in a while. I loved it. I'm not sure why I didn't stick in the softball or women's baseball area. But what I got to ask is, how was the, you know, you had a transition somewhere from baseball to softball, softball to baseball. How was that transition?
You know, it was really interesting. So in to make the story short, 2012, I was coaching high school baseball, trying to get into college coaching baseball, trying to get my name out there. And I was doing some bird dog scouting for the Tigers and just couldn't get a job anywhere. I didn't really play much college, never played the pros. I didn't have a ton of connections in college. And my high school season got done. And I've never watched softball before, other than just a little bit here and there. And I watched the entire postseason off from my couch in May 2012. And I decided to send my resume out to every single Division I softball coach in the country. I'm like, you know what? This softball thing is really cool. It's a fun sport. It's fast paced. It's a lot like, you know, and I kind of really fell in love with it over this 2-week period of watching postseason. And next thing you know, I got like 30, 40 emails from D1 softball coaches saying, hey, you know, we might be interested in having you as a volunteer assistant coach or have, you know, as assistant. And next thing you know, I'm the hitting coach at the University of Oregon, and my softball career kind of took off from there, and I've been in it for about 7-8 years, and I've gone back and forth from baseball to softball. You know, people ask me, you know, which one's better and all these things, but you know, I just love coaching student athletes and, you know, working with hitters. So for me, I love both the sports, and they both have, you know, awesome things about it.
You know, and the one thing I really do like about it is very fast paced. Everything happens quick, and I think keeps people more interested. What about, you know, this is my comment now. You know, I always found that in that short period of time that I was with women in softball, very short, I found that one, it was a little easier to coach them, but two, they listened a lot better. Am I off on that?
Yeah. I would say, you know, I think everyone's experience is different. I've been coaching 19 years. I've done about 12, 13 in baseball and 7, 8 in softball. And I would say the biggest difference in my experience has been that coaching female student athletes, and just in general, they definitely have what I would call more of a posture of learning. And they have this, for the most part, you know, they want to learn, they're willing to listen. It's a little bit easier to break down the buy-in a little bit. I mean, I still think we still get a lot of like, well, my hitting coach teaches me this. Well, my dad told me to do this. you know, you get that in both sports, but I think, like I said, in my experience, the posture of learning has been greater than it has in baseball. Whereas in baseball, I think that the buy-in and the pushback is a little bit more, depending on the people. And I also think it goes, you know, as my career has gone, baseball, I feel like, you know, 10 years ago, high school kids, I couldn't get them to listen to me. And now, because of the, you know, the career that I've had, the buy-in is a lot less because, you know, I have some credibility, I guess you could say. But in general, in my experience, yes, female athletes, they listen a little bit better, they're a little bit more coachable, and I would definitely agree with that.
Well, I believe that they also listen because I believe your last university, you guys, I don't know if you led the country in hitting or you did really well. I mean, that shows a lot what you can do, how you can help young players.
Yeah, the University of South Carolina, I think we led the SEC in like every category, offensive category for conference play. And I think that, you know, the thing about softball that I really, really enjoy is that the ceiling of most softball players is much higher than where they're at right then and there. At least, like I said, in all the years I've been. And so they have the ability to make these huge jumps where a lot of Division I baseball players and MLB guys I've worked with, you know, they're not their ceiling is not that much higher than where they're at. You know, some of them have a bigger ceiling, but in softball, I have seen players that have been overlooked by many coaches or like, you know, maybe they haven't had a great year the year before. You know, have had incredible jumps. I can remember one of my first years ever in softball. I worked with this girl who, as her junior year, had one home run, and for the whole year. And I'm looking at her like, man, this girl should have way more than that. And the year that I coached there, she hit 13 home runs, led the conference in home runs with the same amount of at bats. And it was just like, this is, and you can see like softball, you can make these jumps from 1 to 13 home runs in a year. And I've seen bigger jumps in softball than I have in baseball across the board.
Very interesting. Listen, you mentioned in softball is like baseball, I think, where, you know, you've got all the travel teams, you've got different coaches, you got parents telling them things. You know, how do you cipher through that stuff when a player mentions to him, my private hitting instructor is doing this, or my dad told me this, or whatever it may be? How do you work through those?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's for me, it's a huge maturity change. I'll tell you, when I used to coach high school baseball 10 years ago, 12 years ago, if a player came to me and said that, I'd say, well, it's my way or the highway. You know, I'm your hitting coach while you're here, and so you have to listen to me. Now my approach, as I've hopefully become more mature, is that I have the conversation. Okay, you know, what are they teaching you? Let's have that conversation. Or my dad's my hitting coach. I'm more than happy to invite them in. You know, every year at a school that I've been at, the very first meeting that I have at South Carolina, at Mizzou, at Fresno State, I've said the very first meeting, the number one rule with me is that you can always call BS. You can always call BS on me. It's never my way or the highway. So if I say something that doesn't resonate with you, you just need to come to say, hey, coach, my hitting coach told me this. My dad taught me this. I don't really understand that. And by allowing them to call BS at any time, other than in the middle of practice is not the best time. But if they're allowed to call BS, we can sit down and have the conversation. Like, hey, you know what? My dad told me not to drop my back shoulder or whatever the thing is that they believe. And now we can sit through and talk with it. And that approach has got me much, much further than, you know, don't listen to your hitting coach or don't listen to your dad or, you know, whatever approach I see a lot of coaches have. I invite it in. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what you're against. And I would say 99% of the time, I get them on my page in a willing way so that they are on the same page.
You know, I love that, the open communication. And if you've seen Skype go in and out, it'll come in and out once in a while. Something about Skype being interfered with some kind of internet service or something, you know. One thing I found about podcasts or about anything technology-wise, be ready to adjust anyway, just like in baseball, right? Inning to inning. You better expect the unexpected, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It happens to me all the time.
Well, we're still live on Facebook, folks, so if you got any question for Matt Lyle, type it at the bottom. We're going to rock and roll. We're going to get into a little of the hitting later, but I want to get into this also because this is for all the folks that made the mistake of saying that you throw like a girl. Well, you haven't seen softball players play, and you haven't seen women's baseball. You haven't seen women's professional softball because, man, they can flat out play, Matt. And here's the thing I want to ask you. Besides their skills, they definitely got the skills, and they got the willpower and the knowledge and everything it takes to try to be as good as they can. Besides the skills, what makes them pretty good?
You know, I would just say that in my experience in softball has just been that the female athletes and male to the same. They're ambitious. They want to work hard. They want to win just as bad as. And so for me, you know, from a skill set standpoint, I haven't seen any difference between the male student athletes and the female student athletes I have coached in the sense of their desire to get better, you know, play on the field, give their all. You know, so for me, I don't see any distinction between female and male athletes in regards to, you know, their desire to win and to work and everything else.
How's the game of softball changed throughout the years, 3 years you've been coaching in it?
So when I first got into it, like I said, I got into it in fall 2012. There were not a lot of males in the game, especially not a lot of like hitting guys like me. And what I remember from softball being younger was that, you know, the games were 18 innings long and it was 1-0. Like there was no scoring. Offense is insane in softball now. I mean, you'll see double digit scores, 15 to 14, you know, all the time. Whereas when I first got into softball, that never happened. The offense has absolutely exploded across the board. That's one of the things that I have noticed is that hitting development across the board has gotten huge in softball. And for me, the biggest thing that I learned about softball when I first got into it was the growth mindset that the softball community has. I would tell you 2013, 14, and even 2020, if you look at baseball, you know, we're still arguing about all this stuff in baseball. And it's just like old school versus new school and all the things that baseball has an issue with. But in softball, across the board, coaches are like, hey, how do I get the new information? How do I get the better stuff? How can I help my hitters and my players get better across the board? And so the softball community as a whole is such incredible growth mindset that it's allowed the sport to develop at an crazy pace versus I think baseball has. And so I think softball, which may have been behind a little bit in regards to technical teaching at the high level stuff, is no longer that way. I think that across the board, coaches are just getting better. You're seeing baseball and softball people collaborate. If you watch, you know, Patrick Murphy at Alabama and mm-hmm. at different schools, head coaches, Tim Walton, you're seeing this crossover and connection between college baseball and college softball coaches. And I think there used to be this divide between the two of them. And now you'll see softball people at baseball conventions. You see sharing information across the board. Twitter and social media has really allowed for this bridge to happen in collaboration. And I think that baseball stealing from softball people and softball people from baseball people. And it's really helped the sport grow.
Yeah, I remember, matter of fact, at the ABCA, a lot more softball coaches at the ABCA. And you and I first met at the Mohegan Sun, the yep. World convention, baseball convention. That was an awesome place. The I remember there, I went to listen to the softball coaches, and I was extremely impressed with the way they presented, how they had everything on the PowerPoints, the knowledge that they had. So that was very, very impressive. Let's do this. Let's take a question from somebody on Facebook, Ryan Pryor. He brings up a good point. At the very young levels, I know you've taught at all levels, 10, 11-year-olds. He mentioned, you know, just like in baseball, but softball's even more. The ball's way too big. That hinders the development. Any advice when it comes to that? He mentions a smaller softball.
Yeah, it's funny. So softball has a 12-inch ball in high school, college, and the pros. And in the younger age, they have an 11-inch ball, which is a little bit smaller. Now you think about baseball, same thing, 9-inch ball. And I think about my own kids, like my son who's playing catch in the backyard, small hands. It's amazing to me that the game of baseball and softball doesn't have a tiered thing. Like you think about soccer and basketball, they have a size 3 ball, size 5 ball. Basketball has 27-inch and they grow. Baseball and softball hasn't done that. And so, you know, and I get it from a standpoint of like having to hit a ball that's smaller and smaller. So, you know, I would say I would love to see the game of baseball and softball find some ways to have some smaller balls. You know, I would tell you that I think it's really an interesting thing to look into as the game progresses. I would love to see that. And I would just say the hard part about that is, you know, especially if you have really young kids, I have no problem, you know, having a softball player. My daughter's going to be 7. No problem with her working with a baseball and playing catch with a baseball and getting used to learning how to play the game with a smaller ball. I would love if you are a little league person or have the ability to have some influence in that area, I would love to see the younger groups use smaller balls in both sports.
You know, Matt, and I agree with you, and I'll tell you this. Maybe, you know, it's a transitional period. Maybe during practice you use a smaller baseball, like you said. You know, it can be, and for everybody out there, we know why they haven't gone to a smaller baseball. It's the same reason why baseball's been behind for 10 years, because it's a traditional game, and people yep. hate to break tradition. And finally, we're starting to break tradition, but it takes a little time. There's a lot of ways, things we could talk about breaking tradition, because baseball's certainly done that. I'm sure softball has also, you know, and Ryan mentions even in tennis, they go to a smaller ball. Of course, they have a bigger racket, and then you got to worry about baseball. You know, it's a smaller ball. They're going to be able to hit the smaller ball. It's like you said. So it's not an easy answer, but I think to throw it in your training. Listen, you mentioned cross-training. I think this is very interesting. I do this in hockey and other sports with friends of mine. Talk about how the two sports can cross-train and what they can learn from each other.
You know, for me, I just think that like, across the board from an information standpoint, I think that we try to compartmentalize, like, this is a baseball drill, this is a softball drill. And I think there are some things that are that way, but I think we can learn from each other, whether it's a drill standpoint or, you know, I for me, it's a good example of like Austin Wasserman does a great job with some high level throwing stuff. And I think that, you know, if you label that as a baseball thing, you know, softball people, it's the same exact, you know, we're throwing the same thing. The ball's a little bit different. But yeah. So to me, the drills that you're doing, throwing, fielding, these type of things, I think that you could learn from each other a lot. In regards to cross training for that. And for me, you know, I think that the biggest gain that I have seen in Division I sports when I coached at the University of Oregon and South Carolina, different places, is that the biggest separator for me from the athletes at the highest level isn't so much their skill set as it is their weight room, like what they do in the weight room and how strong they're getting. You know, I've seen some incredible athletes really spend a lot of time, you know, building strength and speed in the weight room. And I've seen that translate more on the field. And so, you know, a lot of times people send me videos of their swing and stuff like that. And we have a couple of players on our team this year at Fresno State, and like, hey, what can I do with my swing? And I'm like, get in the weight room, start lifting, like start getting stronger. Like those are the answers. And I know they sound like they're not very sexy. They're really simple. But honestly, like if I have a teenager or a college player who's never lifted before and they're asking me, you know, how do I hit the ball harder? I'm saying, get in the weight room and start lifting. So, you know, I think that, you know, I think that's been a big change over the years too, is, you know, when I was in high school, weights class was a goof around class that we hung out with our friends, and every once in a while you bench press and did some bicep curls. And now I think back to that and thinking, man, I could have been such a better athlete if I'd not goofed off in that class and actually focused on getting stronger and better.
You know, a great point about when I mentioned cross training, you know, that really the drills are, you know, a lot of them are the same. What you're learning is a lot of the drills, the different drills you talk about, but also, the games are a little bit different, right? Softball, you're starting to see more bunting. I mean, not starting to see, but you see more bunting in softball. Baseball, we're reducing that. The younger levels, we're even reducing it because coaches are saying, well, you're not going to use it when you're older, which I think is a big mistake, but that's a personal opinion. So talk about the game of softball, the offensive things that are used in softball that possibly could also be used in baseball and should be used in baseball.
Yeah, so, and I would tell you, the bunting in softball has dropped off dramatically. Now that, you know, now that almost everybody can hit a home run with the size fences and the technology of the bats, a lot of bunting has gone away. And I'm one of the biggest, I hate sacrifice bunting more than anybody. I'm in that world. But I will tell you, if you watch me coach high school baseball, we won so many games and I had a lot of success because we bunted all the time. And I love bunting. I love drag bunting, push bunting. I think any time that you can put pressure on the defense and make them make mistakes, same thing, you know, the biggest mistake I think a lot of hitters do is by never showing bunt, softball or baseball, they can always play back, you know, they can always, but if you show drag bunt or push bunt every once in a while, you know, and the infield's always playing in because they're worried you're going to bunt, that adds 50 points to your batting average just by having the infield, you know, in all the time on you or not knowing what you're going to do. So to me, good hitters and good offensive players have the tools to push bunt, drag bunt. They're able to bunt if they need to, and just by having that tool. So I hate to see that tool go away from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've won a lot of games by defenses who don't practice it enough and being able to break down a defense by bunting. And like I said, I'm not a huge fan of the sacrifice bunting, like with a runner on first with no outs. But, you know, in college softball, we learned a few years ago, and I hate to throw her under the bus, but Kelly Barnhill, University of Florida, one of the best pitchers in the last 15 years of softball. And this, and if you look at her stats, and I'll tell you what, just to give her some praise, when I was South Carolina, we went over to, and we were so prepared for Kelly Barnhill. Every one of our hitters had an individual hitting plan, and we were dialed in on Kelly Barnhill. I think we struck out 14 times, and she one hit us. I think she had a no-hitter going to the last inning. So totally owned us. But one thing about Kelly that we learned in the World Series one year was she struggled with fielding bunts right at her, throwing to first base. Some pitchers struggle with fielding bunts and throwing to first base. And some teams went after her for that and ended up costing them a lot of runs. So, you know, it's a perfect example of knowing what the defense is like, knowing if you have a pitcher that can't field bunts very well. And so for me, you know, if I know the pitcher can't field a bunt and throw very well, to take bunting out of your game is foolish. You know, you want to go right after those players. If you see a third baseman that's slow-footed or has a bad arm, you feel like you can expose them. And for me, you know, coaching baseball these years, one of my favorite plays in baseball is a two-out, nobody on, drag bunt to third base. You know, when they're not expecting it, they're playing back, they would never sit on it, and seeing a really good drag bunt down third base to get things going, a two-out rally. And so, you know, I'm all in the no bunting group, but I will say that it has a lot of value if you do it right, and I love to see offenses that put pressure on the defense and get that defense to collapse. And I think base running is a big part of that too. I love aggressive base running. I would say at Fresno State this year and throughout the years that I've been a part of offenses that we've scored a ton more runs just by being really aggressive on the bases.
You know, interesting. And, you know, softball at higher level or baseball, you know, it's about winning. And so I would assume that you want to keep this arsenal just in case that you might have to use this, so you might as well practice it, you know, practice it as live as you can. I want to give a quick shout out to Jean Allard from Canada. He is the public address announcer with the World Baseball Softball Confederation. And he had mentioned to me that about women's baseball development, we have a specific show on women's development when it comes to baseball, because they're also obviously playing baseball. But listen, we got to get into this, because I know this is the million-dollar question, comes up all the time. Get into your expertise, especially the swing. Different, same. Get into it. Let everybody know.
And I would tell you that there is absolutely nothing different between the baseball and softball swing. And I'll tell you, like, try not to speak from like a credibility standpoint, but you know, I've coached in the Pac-12 and the SEC with some really good hitters. And I would tell you, the major league players that I'm working with, the college players that I'm working with at Fresno State, they're doing the exact same thing. I would say that the biggest argument that someone could make about the swing being different is that in softball, the pitches come in at a flatter plane. There's no argument about that. In baseball, we've got like a 4 to 12 degree descent. In softball, it's a little bit lower. And so you could make the argument for that. The difference between baseball and softball is that in softball, to hit a home run in most places, you got to hit a ball 67 miles an hour in the air. If you hit a ball 67 at the right launch angle, you know, 26 to 30 degrees, the ball's getting out of the ballpark. In baseball, in college, in high school baseball, you have a 300-foot fence and 400-foot center field fence. You got to get a hold of it to get the ball out of that ballpark. And so in order to, you know, justify maybe having a lesser attack angle in softball to maybe be a little bit more flatter just doesn't make sense to me. Now, if the fences moved back another 50, 75 feet in softball and home runs just kind of fell off the map, I could see, you know, maybe doing a little bit of a little bit flatter swing in softball. But until it happens, and I don't think it ever will, I would never change anything from the swing standpoint and at all. It's the exact same movement patterns, exact same everything.
Yeah, and I've heard you talk about the launch angle a little bit, meaning that, you know, the field's a little bit possibly, you know, a little bit smaller. You know, so you obviously there's more home runs, and you're going to get into the launch angle aspect, but you also, most of your hitters, I believe, are 65 miles an hour bat speed.
Yep.
Or higher, and some are 80 miles an hour. Yep. So why would you not be hitting the ball? And you also said, I want you to talk about both of these. You also said, I'm not sure why somebody would want to not hit for power or paraphrase.
I think there's a stigma, not so much in just softball, but in general, like, hey, this guy can't hit for power. This person's not a power hitter. And we, from all the data over the years, we know the harder you hit the ball, the higher your batting average is. I don't care if it's on the ground. I tell our hitters all the time, in softball, with a short 60-foot bases, hey, if you want to hit the ball on the ground every time, you hit it 85 miles an hour on the ground, people are getting out of the way of that. So, you know, ground balls is fine, but you got to hit the ball harder. And I think that everybody can hit the ball harder than they have hit it in the past. And I think that in baseball, in my experience in baseball and softball over the years, that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we sacrificed power for contact. And you're seeing it in Major League Baseball, obviously. And now a lot of people complain about all the strikeouts and home runs. And I get all that. I think it will start equaling out a little bit. But I think that everybody can hit for better power. People can be more efficient with their movements. And like I said, at the college softball level, I haven't coached anybody that can't hit a ball 67 miles an hour, like, to get the ball out of the park. So for me, and we've got 10 players on our team at 80 miles an hour plus. 80 miles an hour, like I said, our softball field is 205 down the line. Wow. 80 miles an hour in the air is like 300 feet for a softball player. And so you're talking about monster bombs. And so for me, we're always working on building power, because even if you don't put the ball in the air, let's take launch angle off the table. You hit a ball 85 miles an hour on the ground at a shortstop or a third baseman playing 60 feet away, you know, that's some scary stuff. So, you know, let's hit the ball. Let's get everybody hitting the ball harder. That's kind of the goal for me.
You know, it makes so much sense, because, like you said, hit the ball hard, you can get a hit on the ground or on the air. I mean, why not? Of course, the question is going to be, that sounds good, but how do I do it? Where does the power come from? How do you train for that?
So, for us, our training regimen, if I wanted to build power from somebody, I said the weight room is the biggest place. You're going to make the biggest gains in the weight room, like getting just literally physically getting stronger and more mobile. And so, you know, with every hitter in our program and every hitter that I coach with, I always start with a mobility and a strength screening. Like, let's see where they're at. Do they have any mobility issues, ankle mobility, hip mobility? They've got shoulder injury. They've got something. So, you know, we want to build the engine first. Let's figure out how to get them stronger, how to get them they might need to get more mobile. They might need to get less mobile and more strong. And so we kind of start there. And then from there, I do a lot of variability training, meaning that we use heavy bats, we use long bats, we use short bats, light bats, barrel loaded, hand loaded. We're, you know, always trying to create variations so they can get more barrel awareness. And then, you know, the biggest thing that we can do at the youth level, high school level, college level, is teach them just to swing hard. Like, literally, intent can gain you 5 miles an hour of exit speed. It's funny to say that, but for most kids, they just don't swing hard. And so just allowing them the freedom to swing hard is one way. We use a lot of plyo balls in our hitting. We hit heavy things. But at the end of the day, you know, getting hitters to be more efficient with their lower half and learning how to, you know, swing from the middle, swing from the, I use the cue, their belly button, because the belly button can't really go anywhere by itself. So I'm always talking about, you know, firing your belly button, or, you know, firing from the middle of your body. And if you can start learning, and for me, you know, most high school, college players that I've coached, you know, they, baseball guys like to use their hands a lot more. Girls like to use their shoulders and heads a lot more. And so just getting them to refocus how they use their lower half and use their hips is one way to do that.
You know, and you've got some great drills on your website, CoachLyle.com, correct? I said that right, CoachLyle.com?
Yeah, it's thehittingvault.com. And I just realized I've got a low battery, so I got to plug in real quick.
That's all right. Hey, this is a podcast. We can do whatever we want on a podcast. We're still live on Facebook with Matt Lyle. And remember, attention to detail. That was my fault, because I always tell our guests that make sure that you've got enough power. Sometimes they're on a cell phone, you know, and you try your best, just like being a great coach. You try your best to, you know, try to be as organized as possible. You're always going to miss something. Make that adjustment. Come right back. And look at Matt. 2 seconds. We're ready and rock and roll. Hey, listen, on the power, I heard you talk about, because I think another issue that young coaches and even myself have had issues with, location of pitches. You know, a lot of times a high pitch and also a pitch at the knees. Everybody thinks, you know, you're just going to throw your hands down there. Well, it's not really that. It's something else. How do you work with players on lower pitches and upper, you know, pitches higher and lower, different locations?
So try to think the best way to say it is that, you know, how we side bend and how we hip hinge is how we get to different pitches. And so if I'm trying to get to a low pitch, I'm going to side bend more to get to that lower pitch. And we use the term rock the baby sometimes. So we're trying to side bend more. What a lot of youth hitters do, and I'll tell you, a lot of college hitters and pro hitters, to get to the low pitch, they take their hands to the ball. They bend their knees. They find other ways to get to it because they don't side bend very well. And same thing with hip hinging. You know, how much we hinge our hips allows us that space to get to the low pitches. So, you know, I tell hitters all the time, you know, at a high pitch at our shoulders are going to turn pretty flat. Like, and so there isn't a lot of hip hinge or side bend on this high pitch. But in order to get to this low pitch, we're going to side bend a lot to get to that. And our hands are going to relatively stay between our belly button and our sternum for the most part. There's going to be times it gets away with us on inside and outside pitches. But if I see a hitter that takes their hands to the high pitch or takes their hands to the low pitch, I know that they're not hip hinging and side bending very well. And I've got to figure out, is it because they have some type of mobility issue? Like, hey, they've had some, you know, they're not very flexible in their hips. Or something they've never been taught. They've always been taught take their hands to the ball, or you know, it's a teach thing. And so I would say at Fresno State and throughout the years, you know, we spend a good part of our practice time on working on swing movement, on hip hinge and side bend, like learning how to get to low pitches without dropping our hands, and how to get to outside pitches by side bending, or you know, giving ourselves space to do that. You know, I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. At Fresno State University, what are the things that you work on that you find yourself working on the most with your hitters?
I would say those two things, like side bend and hip hinge. I just think that we come across a lot of hitters, not just at Fresno State, in the country, that, you know, the players at arm bar, they reach their hands out in arm bar to try to get to outside pitches or low pitches. Arm bar is a thing that they do. And as soon as they learn how to side bend and hip hinge, they don't have to arm bar anymore to do that. And so that's just something that we do a lot of. The same thing, I've got some players, and I remember South Carolina, one of our best players, like she would drop her hands to get to the low pitch and try to take her hands to the high pitch. And, you know, we spend a lot of time. So I would say just learning how to use our bodies the best, how to side bend, hip hinge, and how to turn fast from the middle. That's where we spend all of our time doing, other than, you know, working on plate discipline and which pitches to swing at, and, you know, working on hitting the changeup and the different pitches. So, but from a swing movement standpoint, that's what we spend, you know, 90% of our time on, is, you know, how to move efficiently and how to do it fast.
Interesting. You're talking about the hands hinge, you know, the hand hinge. Well, Domingo Ayala was teaching that, the jock. He was giving them. I love that. Listen, has to be brought up. Vision is such a big part in anything you do. You know, talk about a little bit about the vision aspect, some of the training you might do with it, because it has to play a big part eventually, yep. Right?
We spend more time on plate discipline, I think, than anybody in the country. I think that, you know, if someone asks me what my hitting philosophy is, it's do damage and get on base. And if you look at our teams from the last couple of years, a slugging percentage and on-base percentage are the stats we always lead in. And so, and this year we were top 10 in the country in walks. I know we, at times, I think we were 2 or 3 in the country in walks at different times. And so for us, our hitters, especially at the high level, like, we're not going to swing at pitches that we can't do damage on unless there's 2 strikes. And so, you know, training how to do that. So we spend a lot of time at Fresno State. We use a program called U-Hit. It's a visual training program. We do a lot of that. Hitters can train on their phone, their iPad. I've used GameSense in the past. GameSense is another one that I really like. I know that Win Reality is a new one that is out that a lot of guys are loving. You know, anything that you can do to get your players to do it. And for us, you know, what I liked about U-Hit was they could do it on their iPhones. They could do it on their iPads at home at nighttime. So I'd tell them, hey, take 5-minute break from your Netflix watching. Do your U-Hit visual training. And then we do it in practice. So we use a thing called the V-Flex. The V-Flex is awesome, teaching you, you know, pitches in the strike zone. We do a lot of, and for us, for example, you know, the thing that Fresno State that we did really well was we didn't swing at rise balls. okay? And a lot of colleges really struggle with that. And if you watched our games, we did a really good job. But you know why? Because we set the machine up every day and throwing rise balls, and hitters had to take the rise ball and swing at the fastball. And so our hitters saw rise ball so much that they learned how to lay off of it. And same with other pitches. So we trained that every day. And so, you know, I think that from the vision training aspect, we had elements of it in practice every single day. And we just made it a really important thing. We celebrated it. Hey, we want to lead the country in walks, and we want to lead the country in on base percentage. And so we talked about it all the time. And for us, one of the biggest goals that we had as a team was, you know, if you get to an 0-2 count and end up getting drawn a walk out of that, like we celebrated that just as much as you hit a home run, because and for us, that was a big, big emphasis. And so I would say at least a third of our hitting practices every day had vision training aspects to it.
Well, I got to tell you, I remember being in Belgium, like I said, and I'm facing these Dutch guys, you know, at 46 feet, I think it was. By the time they get, you know, stride, they're at 30 some feet, and this ball's coming on fast. I mean, what about the ability to pick the ball up as quick as you can and the ability to time that same pitch? I remember what I did, because I had no clue. I just went back to my old thinking of coaching. You know, I would take a larger stride and just lift my foot and put it down, because I was hoping to get to the ball as fast as I can. It came way too quick. Yep. How do you begin to teach that? I know it might be different for every hitter, but how do you begin to teach that?
Yeah, so it is different for every hitter. You know, for us, the one thing I like about softball, again, is these 200-foot fences sometimes, and we have some strong hitters. So, you know, taking away some of those, the movement, like a big leg kick or a big stride, can sometimes really help a hitter, like just to be able to simplify it, do damage without having to do all that. And so some hitters need to have more of that bigger movement because they're more athletic to do that. And so for me, you know, it is an individual basis, but at the end of the day, again, like we've got to make contact. We've got to be on time. You could have the best swing in the world. If you've got bad timing, it doesn't matter. And vice versa. You know, we see so many hitters that have what we call terrible swing or terrible swing mechanics, and they're great hitters. And we're like, how is that possible? And it's because they're on time, and they swing to do damage. So, you know, for me, if we're not on time to do damage, the whole swing mechanics don't really matter. So finding out – so we spend a lot of time on timing. If I see a hitter struggling a lot of times – I'm going to go to the timing before I'm going to go to the swing, because to me, it's usually because they're late or early, or they're having some type of rhythm or timing issue. And, you know, one of the things I like to ask our hitters all the time is, you know, what do you use as a timing mechanism? When do you start your swing? You know, and half the hitters have no idea. They're like, well, the pitcher starts, then I start. I'm like, well, what if she has a really long arm swing or really slow, or she stops? Like, what are you, you know, how are you doing that? It's like, oh, well, I start the same with every pitcher. Like, well, this pitcher throws 70. This pitcher throws 58. How are we having the same swing? And so, you know, a lot of times I'm always trying to get our hitters to communicate what they're seeing, what they're feeling, what they're doing. And I need them to be able to tell me, you know what, when her swing comes back and she's at her full arm, or a baseball guy tells me when he gets to this position, that's when I start. Or when he lifts his leg, I lift my leg. They've got to be able to communicate that so that we can say, okay, hey, you say that you're starting at this point, and the pitcher's doing this, but this pitcher's, you know, throwing your timing off. Maybe we should start later, start sooner. And I think it has to be a, you know, a continuous conversation about that. And hitters have to be conscious of, you know, what adjustments they're making from a timing aspect.
You know, Matt, I think most people understand that, you know, the game's mental, no doubt. A lot of games are, baseball specifically, because, you know, you're going to fail quite a bit. Even in college baseball, I'm sure it gets in hitters' heads. You know, man, and even after they hit two line drives, it doesn't matter to some hitters, because they think two line drive outs, you know, are outs. How do you deal with that at the collegiate level, because of the fact that it's in season, you don't have a whole lot of time, you know, you've got to win, there's pressure on the coaches. How do you deal with all that?
Well, I always start by explaining to them, like, the best players in the game, baseball and softball, like the best players at the highest levels, they're succeeding 40% of the time. So let's put that as like the top end of success rate is 40%. And I think for a lot of kids, their success, if you were to ask them, you know, what's the success rate for that you as a goal for you at this game, some of them are saying 50, 60%. I'm like, So you're Mike Trout. Like Mike Trout's percentage isn't even that high. So let's be clear about the expectations of success and understanding that 60 to 70% of the time you're going to fail in the sport. So let's start there. And then secondly, I ask them all the time, you know, what is the number of at-bats that you have had in a row that you would consider a slump? Let's talk about that, because I think a lot of hitters will say, 0-4, I'm in a slump. And I'm like, 0-4, that's just one bad 3-hour time segment of your life. And, you know, and so I think I always am trying to, you know, figure out from them, like, where's their mindset? And I think that I always try to tell them, you know, Mike Trout is a great example. He's won a couple MVPs, obviously. And in two of his MVP seasons, he had 0-for-19 streaks. Okay, so you're telling me the best player – and at the end of the day, he may end up being the best player in the history of baseball, best hitter of all time, let's say, at some point maybe. He went 0-for-19 and won an MVP and batted .330. So, like, let's frame it around that. So, trying to make some perspective around it and just understanding that you're going to fail. This game's tough. And you can still go 0-for-19 over a, you know, two-week span, and you can still hit .300. You can still be an All-American. You can still do, you know, reach your goals. And so for me, I start with that perspective, like making sure they understand the perspective of failure. And then from there, just giving them tools to work to deal with it, understanding that everyone's going to strike out. So what is your flush mechanism? You know, what is the way that you recover from failure? Let's talk about it, because you got to have it. So when I ask you, when you strike out and you come back in the dugout and you've got, I'll give you 30 seconds to get your composure. You know, what are you doing in that 30 seconds? If you need to go to the end of the dugout and, you know, yell into your helmet, sure, go do that. I'm fine with that. But after that 30 seconds is up, I need you to be a good teammate. I need you to get locked in for defense. I need you to, you know, I need you to be going. So if you can't recover in that 30 seconds, we got to talk about it. So for me, you know, giving them that time and making sure that they can understand what their flush mechanism is, for me, that's a big thing. And this, I want them to understand, like, you can go 0-for-3 in a game, strike out 3 times, and then come up in the bottom of the 9th inning or the bottom of the 7th inning and win the game for your team with one swing. Like, that's the beauty of this game that we all love, is like, you can be the GOAT and everyone's mad at you for striking out 3 times. You're wearing the sombrero. And the whole crowd's like, oh man, this guy's come to bat and he hasn't hit the broadside of a barn. And you hit a walk-off base hit or a home run to win the game for your team. It's like, so you got to be able to always continue to give them a perspective of understanding that you're one swing away, you're one pitch away, and that if we dwell on the past, you're the best, one of the best quotes in the history of baseball for me, I'm pretty sure Babe Ruth said it, is yesterday's home runs don't win today's games. And to me, that's a great metaphor for flushing the good and the bad. We can go on the other end of the spectrum. You've gone 3-for-3. You've hit 3 doubles. You're feeling great about yourself, and you're really, you know, holding on to the past instead of focusing on what this next at bat's going to be like. And I think you know, it can go on both sides.
You know, I love that quote on your right shoulder. Never let the fear of striking out get in your way. A little shout out to Ryan Harrison. Slow the game down. My go-to guy for vision.
Yes, Ryan's great.
One of the best in the business. He's got, he actually has a show once a week now. Check it out on slowthegamedown.com. And we're going to have Ryan, actually, is probably, he's one show ahead of you. I'm being the guy with, you know, most on Baseball Outside the Box. But both you guys have been great to me, and I really appreciate it.
And I'll just say Ryan and Slow the Game Down, his dad, obviously, were great. It was a great guy, and the stuff that they do with the vision training is incredible too. I, when we're talking about the vision stuff, would definitely put him in the top there in the sense of what he has to offer, and I know he's helped a lot of hitters and teams.
Absolutely. Hey, tell me, batting practice in softball, any different than baseball? Anything unique? Anything you do differently?
The only thing that we can do differently, I think, that most teams do, is we do a lot of double, we call it double barrel, where we can split the field in half and we hit two hitters at once. And so we're able to face two live pitchers at one time, just the way the field is designed. And so I would say that a lot of times we have two live pitchers throwing BP at the same time with hitters on the field. So that's probably the biggest difference that I see that most teams don't really do in baseball. You don't see very often is double or triple barrel BP on the field. But besides that, the way that I run stations is pretty much the same way.
Is there, in your live pitchers, you have coaches in BP? Does it depend on?
It really depends. Like, you know, I'll give you a great example. At the University of South Carolina, our graduate assistants were both like all conference, all American SEC pitchers that, and if you were to ask them, they probably hated me because I made them throw almost every day. And I would make them throw real, like live pitching against our hitters every day. And I would tell them, hey, today I want you to throw, you know, rise ball, curve ball, or change up. And so they, you know, they threw every day at Fresno State. We're really, really lucky that our GA pitched at Oregon State. Our pitching coach, you know, was a Team USA and also pitched at Fullerton. She's a stud. So they were able to throw every day live for us. So not every school has the ability to do that. And so for us, we are able to see, you know, almost game-like live pitching every day. And the one thing that softball has the advantage of over baseball is that, you know, you could have someone throw live for an hour and they're not dying, whereas in baseball, you know, you can't have someone throw live pitching for an hour straight to your hitters, where the softball motion's a little more forgiving on your body.
You know what? Since you brought the pitching real quick, a quick question comes up a lot is, you know, as they say, softball pitchers can pitch all the time, but there's still got to be wear and tear on the body.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like anything else that you're still going to get like the wear and tear. Like if you ask me, you know, hey, we're going to take 500 swings a day, it's going to be a lot more damaging to my body than taking 50 swings a day. And so, you know, it's less damaging, but there's definitely the wear and tear of, you know, throwing. You know, I watched it was UCLA versus Ole Miss. Maybe 2-3 years ago, super regional softball game, went 13 innings. 14 innings, and both pitchers went CGs, and both pitchers threw over 200 pitches, and it was like, you just don't ever see that in baseball. It's an interesting difference in baseball and softball. I've seen pitchers throw 200-plus pitches, and they're still going strong.
Wow. Matt, you've been fantastic. We're coming to the end. I got to stop it sooner or later because you've got things to do, and we can go on for hours because this is awesome. Listen, on during game day, we'll finish it with this, and then anything else you want to say to our coaches, players, or parents around the world, some last-minute advice is always good to have. But during game day, what's Matt Lyle doing as a hitting coach?
So during for me, I spend most of my morning and day watching the opposing pitchers of the other team, like watching more video. I've done it all week, but you know, one thing that I pride myself on that creates way more work for me than anybody else is that every hitter on our team gets an individual hitting plan. So, like, I would create a hitting plan for Peter, and I say, Peter, you know, here's the pitchers we're going to face. Here is your plan versus having a team plan and knowing your swing, knowing what your skills are. I'm going to say, hey, Peter, this is your game plan. And then I'm going to spend that day just kind of going over my notes some more, watching the pitchers. And then spending, when we get to batting practice and players show up, you know, starting to talk a little bit, just mostly about the mental side. We never talk swing mechanics. We never talk about the swing, just mentally getting ready. BP for me is about fun. Let's get loose. Let's have some fun music. Let's really focus on just enjoying our time, enjoying this game. And then as we get closer to game time, just kind of just fine tuning our game plan, making any adjustments that we might see based on the pitcher. But for me, it's really about just making sure everybody is as prepared as possible, because once the game starts, the game is the kids. The game is for the players and the coaches. My goal is to not overcoach and let them play the game, but I want to prepare them the best I can going into that game. So for me, that day is about preparation. And then when we get to BP, it's about having fun and relaxed and going in with the mindset of let's have some fun and let's do some damage.
All right. That was awesome. All right. Give it up. And last minute, what do you got? Last minute advice to everybody in the world on Baseball Outside the Box.
You know, my best advice is always going to come from a parent standpoint. I've got five kids. For me, my best advice, if you are a parent of a kid that wants to play, you want them to play on and on and on, you've got to give them permission to fail. That's the number one thing. You've got to understand that kids have to understand that your love for them has nothing to do with their ability. If they went 4-for-4, if they went 0-for-4, you know, I think that I come across a lot of kids who – they fail and they see that their parents treat them differently when they fail. And at some point they get burnt out from all of it. And, you know, as a parent, my best advice to parents is to enjoy this time that your kids are playing this game. Love on them, because my oldest daughter is 23. She's out of the house. She's working. And, you know, you're going to miss that time. So, you know, give your kids permission to fail and enjoy the time that you have with them, that quality time that you get. You know, coronavirus and the world right now is a really tough place. But I'm really enjoying my backyard time playing wiffle ball with my sons, and I'm trying to spend as much quality time with my kids as I can with this game. And so my best advice is to really cherish and love on that time, because it's going to go like that. And if you make sports a miserable experience for them, you're going to really regret that down the road.
Fantastic advice from assistant softball coach at Fresno State University, Matt Lyle. We're going to have all this stuff on the show notes. We'll have everything. He's got 700,000 followers. There's a lot of people on social media asking for Matt and asking for his advice, because he has some great stuff. Matt, can't thank you enough, man. You went way overboard on time. Love it. Thank you. I've took a ton of notes. Wishing you a good day, and God bless you, man.
Thanks, Peter. I appreciate it, man. Take care, bud.
All right. One of the best in the business, Matt Lyle there. Pete Caliendo here. Thank you to our producer, Brian Crack, with the Lineup Media Group. I want to thank all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world for joining us. You guys are fantastic. You keep spreading the word of the show all over the place. Please do so. We're getting better ratings all the time. Listen, tomorrow, the Boston Red Sox pitching coach, Dave Bush, 11 o'clock Central Time. Same show, same station. Everybody, thanks for listening to the show that loves to bring coaches with different concepts, different ideas that love to challenge the status quo at times. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, with Baseball Outside the Box. God bless you all, and we'll see you tomorrow on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.